90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
Welcome to Art Talk Bus Stop. I'm Nicole, and I'm joined here with...
I'm Manny, a sophomore at Reynolds.
I'm Katie Sullivan, and I am an art teacher at Reynolds High School and also the coordinator for ROCA, the Reynolds Gallery of Contemporary Art.
I'm Erica Thomas, and I am the artist producer of Art Talk Bus Stop.
And we are joined here with a pretty unique guest, Ashley Stonemeyer.
Hello.
Hi, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So you are pretty unique to this podcast. You're the first curator we've had on here. So can you kind of tell us a little bit about who you are as a curator?
Sure. I do a lot of things outside of curating, as I think a lot of the guests that you have probably had on would say the same. But I started out studying art history and then went through a curatorial practice graduate program. And for the past 10 years have been curating exhibitions and doing a lot of writing about contemporary art. And I have been in Oregon for about 5 years. I came here from the Bay Area, and it's been really, really exciting to curate within the context of the Pacific Northwest. Most recently, my curatorial position was at the Art Gym at Merrillhurst University until it closed in 2018. But the really cool and exciting thing about the Art Gym is that it had a regional mandate, meaning that lots of the artists that we worked with at the Art Gym were artists from Oregon, Washington, British Columbia, and Alaska, which was kind of our conception of what the Pacific Northwest is. And it's been really fun to make exhibitions these past 10 years, working with all different artists, particularly artists from marginalized communities, so non-white artists and queer artists especially. And to get to take into account some different contexts about where we are in the state of Oregon and where we are in the United States and what kind of practices are unique and special for artists living in this area and why they are thinking the ways that they're thinking and making the things that they're making.
For those of the people out there that aren't exactly familiar with the curator, what exactly do you do?
Yeah, so curators, first and foremost, are administrators. When there are exhibitions that are being made, you have the artist, of course, who is responsible for making the work that's shown in the exhibition, but then you also have a curator who's sort of the intermediary between the artist and the institution where the exhibitions are being made. So I would say that curators are really just helpers. They think through what's the best way to show and contextualize artworks. So for artists who are making really incredible, thoughtful, beautiful things, curators come in and sort of help with how to both visually and academically communicate to a public why what the artist is doing is so cool and special.
So you mentioned that you kind of see yourself as a helper. If I ask anyone else, do you think they would consider themselves an artist?
There's a lot of overlap between being an artist and a curator. I personally just consider myself an administrator. I studied studio art a little bit, but I'm not very good at it, to be perfectly honest. So I get my joy more out of getting to interact and engage with people who are a little bit more proficient at that than I am. But I'm really inspired by artists and their ideas. And so I wanted to be a curator to help sort of share with the public what lots of artists are doing in ways that they don't always get to communicate without a little administrative help. So I personally don't consider myself an artist, but there are a whole lot of artists who consider themselves curators, and a whole lot of curators that I think would really love for what they do to be considered an art form or a different creative practice.
Before you became a curator, did you ever like actually consider becoming an artist and kind of trying to build up your school skill?
Oh yeah, for sure. So I studied studio art in undergrad. I studied both studio art and art history. So it was a really tough decision when it was time to go to grad school to think about whether I wanted to sort of continue down a road of being a maker and trying to hone my skills making artwork in different mediums, or if I thought that I was a little more skilled at the administration and the context and having conversations around making art for publics. And I decided that the second one was probably a little better for me. Thank goodness for everyone's eyeballs that I didn't go down that other path, because again, I really struggled with that. But I did try, and I think that originally trying to be an artist is what really inspired me to be a curator and be an administrator, because I know how very labor intensive and special what artists do really is.
When you talk about grad school and the programs, how long did that take, like, become a master curator?
Yeah, so I went to a curatorial practice program, and there are a whole bunch of different ones all around the country and all around the world. The one that I went to took 2 years for a lot of people. So for a lot of curatorial practice programs, they're a terminal degree and a master's degree, which means 2 extra years of school after the 4 that you do in undergrad. But also a lot of curators have PhDs, and they get their PhDs in art history. So that's a different degree than like a curatorial practice degree. But it's the, in the end, people can get sort of similar jobs. PhDs take a whole lot longer to get because they're a whole lot more intensive in terms of the kind of writing that you do, and you write something called a dissertation, which takes a whole bunch of years to write. But in the end, you're a doctor, which is really, really cool, and you can get some jobs at museums that are really specialized. So even more than a curatorial practice degree, if you have a particular subject that you're really kind of interested in, or if you're interested in a really particular mode of art making from a really particular culture, some people decide to do PhDs in art history instead of just a 2-year degree in curatorial practice.
Have you ever thought about kind of pursuing that?
You know, for the kind of work that I want to do, I don't think I need a PhD. Lots of PhDs end up doing really specific work in really specific kinds of museums. And for me as a curator, I'm not actually interested in museums so much, which is kind of a funny thing to say. Lots of my exhibitions are made in alternative spaces. So lots of the exhibitions that I make and lots of the space that I take up with the artists that I work with actually don't happen in museums with sort of the white wall setup. I'm sure both of you have been to museums and galleries before, and they all kind of look similar, right? Like they have white walls, so everything's nice and clean, and things are hung in frames, and it's a really particular sort of setup. But I'm interested more in how art lives in public. I'm really interested in how art can live in funny kinds of other spaces. I like the way that art lives in houses, and I like the way that art lives in the woods and outside, and I really like the way that art can live in spaces where maybe we don't expect to see art. I think it's really fun when we're surprised to see the things that artists have done and sort of the cracks of everyday life that don't necessarily look like gallery spaces. So for me, if I had a bigger interest in being the kind of curator that does museum work, then I for sure would want to think a little harder about getting a PhD. But since I have kind of a funny practice, I don't think that it's necessary for me.
So after your job at the college, you're pretty much considered a freelancer, and
yeah,
you kind of just love working with different spaces. Once you kind of did all that schooling and you kind of were like, oh, I kind of need a job now, how did that go for you? Was it a challenge? How difficult was it for you, or how easy was it?
Yeah, it's really difficult. There's a lot of really smart, creative people walking around this world, and that's like a beautiful, wonderful thing. But unfortunately, there's not a whole bunch of jobs. And so one thing that kind of happens for a lot of us, both artists and curators, is that we have to kind of make our own jobs. we have to kind of make our own opportunities for making and showing work. So especially as a freelance curator, that's something I've had to do a whole lot of. And the way that I do that is that I write grants. If you know what a grant is, it's when there are some organizations like family foundations or government agencies that have money set aside for art making. And so what you can do is that you can write these agencies and these foundations a note explaining to them an idea that you have that you're really, really excited about, but maybe don't have the money to realize. So you write them a note and you tell them as many details as you can about what it is you're hoping to make. And if they like your idea, sometimes they'll give you a little bit of money to make it. So that's one thing I have to do a whole lot of as an independent curator, is I have to write a whole lot of grants explaining to people why they should help me make the things that I'm really excited to make. But beyond that, I also want to say that of the sort of paid or salaried jobs that I've had working in the art world, I've had to work in a whole bunch of different categories or sort of silos of the art world to figure out what I like best, and that maybe being an independent curator is what I like best. I've worked in commercial galleries, which means that a big part of my job was not just showing artwork, but selling it to people. I've worked at universities, which meant that a big part of my job was not just making exhibitions, but explaining it to like a really particular audience of students. And then I've had jobs at within museums that deal with also a particular public, mostly related to where that museum is. So I had to have a whole bunch of different jobs to decide what I kind of liked best and what sorts of art institutions I was excited to do things with, and what sorts of art institutions I thought maybe were not super in line with the things that I was interested in. So it took a really long time to sort of figure out what the right direction was to go.
Once you kind of got on that path and started doing more work with other people, what is that process like for you? What is curating like for you, whether it's with a lot of people or maybe just somebody else on the side with you?
Curating for me always starts with an artist project that I'm really excited about. Some curators have ideas that that they want to make an exhibition about this, that, or the other topic, and then they go out and they find artists that are doing work that deals with that topic, and they sort of go about it that way. For me, I like to do it the opposite way. I like to do a lot of things called studio visits, which is where you visit artists in their workspace and sort of see the early stages of their ideas. You get like a really cool sneak peek of things that they're making maybe before they're finished. And so I do a lot of studio visits that I don't always walk away with an immediate idea of how that work can live, but sometimes I do. And sometimes I get really lucky that I'll do a studio visit and I'll see something that I'm like, you know what? I did a studio visit the other month with someone who's doing something that would be a really good conversation with what this artist is doing. So for me, I like to start from a place of visiting with artists and having conversations with them and hearing what kinds of things they're interested in and why they're making what they're making. And from there, I sort of build exhibitions around that.
You also mentioned that you write about art, temporary art. How was that like, and how'd you get started in that too?
Yeah, that was another thing that happened while I was in graduate school. I went to graduate school in San Francisco, and there are some really great arts publications in San Francisco that when I was a graduate student, I was really lucky that they offered me the opportunity to start writing exhibition reviews, which means you go see shows and you go see things that artists are making, and then you write something about it. You write something that tells other people not just what was in the show, not just describing what this artwork looked like that you saw, but talking a little bit more about why you think the artist made it and why that's important, and what's like a broader connection to the world around us that you think that the artist is tapping into. So when I was in graduate school, I started writing a lot of these exhibition reviews about things that I was seeing when I lived in San Francisco. And then from there, my opportunities sort of expanded to do other kinds of writing for arts publications. So not just exhibition reviews, but also some opinion things about things that I was excited about and things that I hoped to see in the future, and things that I had seen that maybe I didn't think were such a wonderful idea, or maybe that I hoped would grow and expand in certain ways as we continue to think about it and talk about it and write about it. So after a bunch of years of writing, probably 2 or 3 years ago, I was asked to come aboard one of these publications that I write for as an editor, which has been a whole lot of fun because it means that I get to work with a lot of writers who are just so much smarter and thoughtful than me even about things that they want to write about. And I get to help give them the resources to tell some stories that they want to tell.
You've seen a lot of art and you've written a lot about it, and you go to a lot of shows. So has there ever been a certain exhibition that has sort of resonated with you?
That's a great question. Yeah, all the time, I think. When you see a lot of shows, it's sometimes gets to be a situation where they can like blur together and you don't remember them so well. But it's really, really exciting when you see one that sticks with you and that you think about a lot for a long time. Sometimes there are whole exhibitions that I think about that way, and sometimes there are just particular works from particular exhibitions that stick with me and that I think a lot about and that I'm excited that I saw. So yes, the answer to your question is yes, and let me think of an example. Ooh, a few years ago, I was in Calgary, Alberta, in Canada, and there's this really cool space called the Esker Foundation in Calgary, and I saw an exhibition there called Earthlings that was really, really wonderful. It was a collaboration between an artist named Sherry Boyle and some of the Indigenous communities that live in Canada, and it was an exhibition of some like collaborative paintings and drawings, and then Sherry Boyle also makes really beautiful ceramics, which I would say are the thing that Sherry is best known for. And one reason that was really exciting to see all the way in Canada is because it was called Earthlings, and the artists that were in the show were thinking a lot about a writer called Ursula Le Guin. And Ursula Le Guin is a writer that writes some really exciting, well-known science fiction stories. And the cool thing about seeing that in Canada is that Ursula, when she was alive, was here in Oregon with us. And so it was really, really cool to see people in Canada having a really close relationship with those writings and wanting to make art about it.
So can you explain like what the Portland Biennial is?
Yeah.
What the Portland Biennial is?
Totally. So a biennial is a big art exhibition that's called a biennial because it takes place every 2 years. That's where the word biennial comes from. And there's all kinds of biennials all around the world. There's really famous ones in other countries. Probably the most famous one is called the Venice Biennale, which takes place in Venice, so a long, long way from here. But in Oregon, we have one called the Portland Biennial, which is kind of a silly name because it should really be called the Oregon Biennial. And it's a big exhibition that takes place every 2 years, and it is sort of a showcase of artists who live and work in Oregon and the work that they're making at the time. So I was really, really lucky to be asked to help curate the Portland Biennial that happened in 2019. And I had two other curators that did it with me, so we did it as a team. Their names were Yael Amir, who also lives here in Portland, and Liz Johnson, who lives in Seattle. So we had this team of three curators, and we all worked really hard together thinking about why artists maybe choose to live in Oregon and what's special about their art making given that they do live in Oregon. And so that's a big job, right? Like, Oregon's a whole state with lots and lots and lots of artists in it. So it took a long time to make. It took over a year to organize and put together. And we did lots and lots of studio visits and had lots of conversations. And in the end, ended up making a biennial that we were really excited about because we thought it was really diverse. We thought we did a good job getting all kinds of artists from all different kinds of experiences, making all different kinds of work. And in the end, the show that ended up happening was really exciting because it was made from a lot of different points of view, which we were really proud of. And there was some work in there that was kind of funny and that people maybe didn't understand so well or that they had never seen before. But I think that the three of us curators were really happy and excited about that. There was work that was the work that you typically see in a biennial, so lots of paintings and drawings and sculptures, but there was also work that was time-based. So there was work that was performances or things that sort of changed or disappeared over the course of the exhibition. And we thought that that's something that's really, really special about Oregon artists is that they experiment so much and are not afraid to do different, exciting things and see how they turn out. So in 2019, we made the biennial, and in two more years, someone different will make the biennial.
With the biennial, it seems like it's kind of not easy necessarily, but it is more easier to kind of get a big and diverse sort of crowd of artists. But with smaller exhibitions, do you ever find yourself being biased? And if so, how do you try and stray away from that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think there's absolutely bias. All curators have bias because we're all interested in different things. I really am interested in the perspectives of marginalized artists. So there might be some people who say that I'm biased towards artists who maybe aren't white or artists who maybe are queer in some way, either genderqueer or queer in their sexuality. I'm interested in artists who I think maybe don't get or historically have not gotten the kinds of attention that other artists have gotten. And that means in medium as well. So, you know, there was a period of time in art history where maybe abstract painting was the big fancy thing that everyone was interested in. And those that kind of work from a particular kind of artist got a whole lot of attention. So in my practice, I'm really interested in thinking through and looking for what kinds of art and what kinds of artists maybe haven't gotten as much attention. And so I think there are people who would say that I'm biased in that way towards like a particular sort of practice or a particular sort of artist. But I think every curator is that way. Like, I think every curator has particular things that they're interested in. And it doesn't mean that you're biased in, like, an ugly or a discriminatory way. It just means that you have a particular focus or interest regarding things that you want to show the public and things that you want to make sure the people around you know and have a chance to see.
When putting a show together, you have to kind of look at all this art and determine whether or not it fits your theme, whether or not you think it would work with all the other art that you want to put in. So do you ever kind of come in contact with sort of bad or good art? Do you think that exists?
Yeah. Gosh, I don't know. That's a tricky question. I think there's definitely bad art, but what I would say about that is just because I choose not to include a particular artwork or a particular practice in something that I'm working on doesn't mean that that art is bad. It just means that it's not a perfect fit for the conversation that I'm hoping to have. As an artist, it can be really sort of tempting and scary to think that when you don't get picked for something, that means that the work that you're making is not very good. And that's not true. That's not true at all. It just means that you may have to wait a little bit longer for the opportunity that's going to best showcase what you've made. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Cool.
I know a lot of artists and a lot of people have different answers to this, but since you're around a lot of art, how would you define art?
Ooh, what a big question. Lots of people have been fighting for a long time and will be fighting forever about the answer to that question. And it's a tough one to answer. I think for me, art is not even always visual, right? Because I think a lot of people would say music is art. I think a lot of people would say writing is art. So art is a bunch of different things, visual or otherwise. But I guess in the broadest possible terms, I would say that art is a way that people get creative in expressing or sharing their observations about the world around us. We all are sort of global citizens of the same earth, and we all have different experiences that we like to sort of manifest in different ways, whether that's through making beautiful objects or things that we wear or things that hang on the wall or maybe time-based things like music or performance or dancing. Art can take a whole lot of forms, but I think it's just, again, people being creative about the observations that they have about life and culture and the things that they see going on around them.
Do you ever realize sort of the impact that you have on artists? Artists, in a way, they create and they impact the public, but you allow them to kind of put their art out there. So do you ever sort of realize the impact that you have towards the artist?
Interesting. I don't know. I don't know what sort of impact I personally have, but something I have a lot of pride in as a curator and administrator is that I think one of my biggest jobs is helping artists find the resources that they need to do and make what they want to do and make. So I would think that the impact that I have on artists and their practices isn't so much a creative impact as I help do some of like the administrative or logistical work to help find resources like money that artists need to be able to make what they want to make.
Do you have anything you might want to plug?
Ooh, you know what? Not really. Lots of the things that I had going are kind of on hold or facing a nebulous future here because of COVID. So for that reason, I'm a little hesitant to plug things that might not happen. But thank you for asking. That's really generous. I do have a website with just some images of past exhibitions and some past writing. And it's just my first initial and my last name, so astolmyers.com.
All right, thank you guys so much for listening and tuning in. Be sure to check us out on Instagram at Reynolds Art Show to find more of our stuff, like our galleries that will hopefully be coming back in the future. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll see you on the next episode.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Welcome to the Got Science Podcast. I'm your host, Colleen MacDonald.
Just before the pandemic hit, I spent some time out in the Bay Area talking to electric vehicle and renewable energy experts. Today, I'm going to share one of those conversations. And stick around after the interview for a special edition voting rights segment with our own research and writing assistant, Jiayu Liang. Let's kick off this episode with a fun fact. Electric vehicles, or EVs, are a lot older than you might think. I mean really old.